You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the OFT podcast. I am your host, Joshua Voles, site manager over at onefootnow.com on the SB Nation Network. With me tonight, senior editor Jude Seymour, all the way over in New York. Jude, what's up, Knight?
Hey man, I was researching New Mexico and just wondering aloud why Bob Davies still is employed by anyone.
Are you saying he should have never been employed by ESPN?
You didn't want to
hear the word football.
Being a third wheel behind Brent Musburger and Kurt Herbstreit is certainly an accomplishment in life. But no, I was more referring to the Lobos' terrible seasons sandwiched with Davies' violation of ethical conduct and compliance portions of his contract.
It makes you wonder, that's a nice way of saying that, right? You know, he probably had one of like the best college staffs. Like, if you possible, like Charlie Strong, Urban Meyer, Dan Mullen,
Steve Adazio.
Yeah. So how do you do so poorly? it's just like things should have been a lot better and things got handed off to you a lot better than the rest of the Notre Dame coaches. So I'm not quite sure if he's a bigger failure than Ty, but It seems like it.
I mean, this one's personal for me. I really wish Bob Davies.
Well, this was you. This is your youth.
Yeah, I was 98 to 2002, so I lived the entirety of my time as an undergraduate was the Davy year. So, you know, I really wanted to see him come back and take his beating personally. But
I mean, this took all the joy
on his scorecard. So.
This took all the joy of covering this game out of it for me.
Yeah,
like,
it really did.
Like, I don't really get too, like, fan. I mean, screw that. Of course I get fancy when I'm there covering a game. I mean, shit, it's me, for God's sakes. But, you know, I'm normal. But, I mean, I was really kind of looking forward. I was going to be in that Bob Davy post-game presser. And some way, somehow, there was going to be a text message sent to my dad. Like, can you fucking believe that I'm interviewing Bob Davy after Notre Dame lost in 2019? Like, something like that. Like, this is just like the stress this man put us through as a father and son. I mean, come on.
So, I don't know. I said
the best thing about this game, and it's gone.
I stood out in the cold in West Lafayette, Indiana, in a game that was rescheduled from September 14, 2001, and rightfully so, chanting for Bob Davey to be fired. So that was the only thing that was great about being in West Lafayette in December, you know, watching a 5-17 play.
That was awful. We've talked about that before. That was the game where I still went down there. Man, I can't believe this is the anniversary of when that Purdue game should have been played.
Yeah.
I guess it was the next day, wasn't it? A few days.
The 11th was a Tuesday. So, yeah, we can probably do the math. And maybe it was the 15th that was supposed to be played. But, anyways, it doesn't matter.
But, anyways, I was down there sleeping in a parking lot in my car after running from the cops that night. all sorts of good things going on. and I never did go down to West Lafayette in December.
Anyways, should we talk about New Mexico for a couple minutes? Feign some interest.
You know what? You can talk about New Mexico tonight because I am going to follow the lead of my head coach, Brian Kelly. And when Brian Kelly gets there on the Tuesday press conferences now held on Mondays for the season, he said this is about them and what they do and yada yada. I mean, he listed off this was not a Charlie Weiss press conference where Charlie listed off everything about the opposing team, which was one of the most generous and boring and pointless things ever. But I'm with Kelly. This is about Notre Dame and what we do. And I took the easy route this week. And am I taking New Mexico for granted? Yeah, you bet your fucking sweet ass I am. This has been a weird start to the season as it is. So am I taking a little bit off? Yeah. Did I publish a Notre Dame haiku post this week? Hell no. So I know you put in the work. You did the research. Pat has a good story up today with the guys over at Mountain West Connection on SB Nation. Y'all should read that. Pat's preview on Friday. We'll have a whole bunch of nuggets to do about New Mexico, so you should look forward to that. The anti-preview, I should be writing that after I record this. I say should because if I'm asleep at my desk, I'm asleep at my desk. But that will not have any really good, pertinent New Mexico information. However, it's always a good time. So, Jude, since you put in the work, you put in that time card, man. You stayed over for the OT. What do you got?
Well, I got a team that is not very good. They're SP plus.
Move on. Yeah.
And we're done. Welcome to my podcast. Goodbye.
Go on.
SP plus projection is a 4-8 season this year. Obviously, they already got one. Their win against Sam Houston State to open up the season. Adam from Mount West Connection, as previously alluded to you in the article with Pat on our site, thinks they can go 6-6, 7-5. They have a schedule that helps them miss kind of the best teams in the Mountain West, and so they don't have to play San Diego State, they don't have to play Fresno State, they do play Liberty, they do play New Mexico State, obviously San Jose State, Colorado State, but this is just, you know, this is Bob Davies' team who he took them to a bowl two straight years and now has done, I think, back-to-back 3-9 seasons.
When he took them to the bowl game, wasn't that like their crazy ass, like weren't they like in the top five rushing that year?
I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that he used to like to run the option offense. So
yeah, they ran a form of the option, at least when he first got there, correct?
Yes, that's my understanding. Okay. Yeah, so
because I mean, if I've watched any New Mexico over the last decade, I'm usually in a different state of mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're questioning life choices probably because you're staying up late to watch some weird, you know, Pac-12 after dark.
My wife is questioning my life choices. I know damn well what I'm doing. I can quit anytime.
the offense is returning 7 starters. Davey teased that they were going to play 4 quarterbacks. Only 2 have played so far. Again, some of this information might be familiar to people who read the article that posted today. Brant Hughes started the game. He's a JUCO kid. He's a now out for an extended period of time, possibly. I don't think it's the whole season, but it's a shoulder injury. So the next man in is Sherron Jones, a former Tennessee commit. And then a guy that, you know, both Pat.
Is that someone Tennessee could use right now?
Yeah, right. And Adam both kind of expect us to see play this weekend is Teva Ka Toi Okta.
Oh, you're just tearing this name up, aren't you?
Teva Ka Toi Okta.
You didn't get a pronunciation list this week, did you?
Teoi Te. You know, I practiced this before I got on the podcast, and I still couldn't make it sound flawless. So, apologies to Tevaka if that's how you spell say your first name. He's got described by Adam as a cannon of an arm. Amazingly, he started school in 2016, still has 3 years of eligibility left. Redshirted his first season and actually got hurt. I think it was the first game of last season and missed the entire season. So. He's already got back a year. So that's the QB situation. Offensive line, just the one guy who stands out there is the right tackle, Tayton Saltz. He's a 6'6", 285-pound junior. 285 is not very big, but he didn't give up any sacks, hits, or hurries during his 76 snaps against Sam Houston State. So he got a shout-out from Pro Football Focus for that. Pro Football Focus, college edition, obviously. Amari Davis is their running back. He had 107 yards rushing, 58 yards receiving, and 2 touchdowns, which is pretty cool. I think that we would definitely take that. And then their wide receiver group is broken up as speedsters and tall guys. So they've got 3 speedsters, Jay Griffin, Jordan Kress.
Is that how they're listed on the depth chart?
No, that's how Adam listed them in his story today. And Elijah
Lilly. I wish that's how it was.
Yeah. And then I didn't actually go back and look at the box score for the reasons why, but New Mexico actually scored 4 times in under 2 minutes against Sam Houston State, and 3 of those drives were under 1 minute. So they were scoring quick. I mean, like, what can you really tell from a game against Sam Houston State? But you know, here it is, right? And then we get the speedsters, and then you get the tall trio. Q Drennan, I think it's Q. I was telling Josh about this before we started recording. Its first name is Q apostrophe. And then the pronunciation guide gave me Q-U-E. And I was like, okay, like barbecue or I don't know. Like I was thinking just still Q. And then I started thinking deep about it. And I was like, well, if it was Q, they should just put the letter Q or not give me any pronunciation at all, or maybe put the word Q, C-U-E, so then that would be. And then I thought, well, Q-U-E in Spanish is K. I mean, is it possible it's pronounced K? So I was
what is going on in your head?
I was definitely overthinking it. So I mean, I
didn't need a pronunciation guide if the guy's name was B apostrophe. It's just B.
Yeah, well, Seymour Flemister, right? So yeah. So, yeah, Q is a 6'2", Aaron Molina, a senior, 6'3", and Anu Samoye, and I apologize if I butchered that, 6'2", senior. So that's the offense in a nutshell. Defense, 6 returning starters. They gave up 558 yards of offense to Sam Houston State, which ranked them, after the first week, 122nd. I believe there's, 130 FBS teams now?
Where's Van Gorder and Bowling Green ranked?
I mean, probably got to be dead last, right? Based on right. what he's turned in. I did not look it up, but I'm just going to say dead last.
They're in BG territory.
Yeah, huge loss that they announced this week. Aaron Blackwell, their senior nose tackle, is out for the season. The kind of guys to watch and the fell Adam from the Mountain West Connection mentioned this guy, Alex Hart. He's the middle linebacker, 6'3" senior, leader of the defense. This is actually the second straight year he's a senior captain. He was named the captain, and then he had a season ending injury against New Mexico State. He was the team's leading tackler through 3 games last year, had not taken a red shirt, so actually availed himself of that new red shirt option, and has returned this year as a quote-unquote senior again and a captain again or whatever. So Dylan Horton is the what they call the rush end, 6'4", senior. And then their buck guy is his nickname is Moana. His first name is Alexander, and it's Vinicolo. And he had 101 snaps against Sam Houston State. And he's only his career high or his career total coming into that game was – 310 or 301. So maybe that guy's going to be a little worn. We'll see how well he travels.
That's a lot of snaps.
Just overall, well, let's talk about special teams. My favorite guy on this team is Tyson Dyer. Not only did he have an 84-yard punt, which brought back terrible flashbacks of Randall Cunningham doing that to the New York Giants back in like 88, 89, 90, where it just kind of rolled on forever, and I don't know what Dave Meggett was doing. But the thing I love about Tyson Dyer is he's the oldest dude on the team, 27 years old. He doubles as a mechanic on the side, according to the game notes. I don't know what kind of mechanic.
Oh, my God.
What? I'm just going to guess, like, I don't know, aviation or something, you know?
What's his jersey number?
Good question. I don't know. Probably something high, don't you think? That kind of feels like a high number.
I don't know. I think with a punter, you can just do about anything.
Yeah, you absolutely could do anything. He's Australian, of course. Of course he is, right?
So hell yeah, he is. Especially if he's a West Coast punter.
Yeah. From Queensland. Looks like his number is 90, if I'm reading his jersey right, or 95, 96.
That's a hardcore guy right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised he doesn't have neck tattoos, to be honest with you. I'm a little disappointed in the lack of tattoos. It looks like maybe he's got one under his arm. So we'll do a tattoo.
Someone send a tattoo guy over to his house with some strippers and get this job done.
Let's get this going and represent his native Queensland.
He just needs like a big like outline of fucking Australia on his neck, like on one side, and then just like a kangaroo. With a Joey popping out of the pouch.
I was thinking maybe a koala blowing through a didgeridoo. That's what I was kind of hoping for. So,
oh yeah, or that, what's that big ass rock they got over there? Is it literally called like Big Flat Rock or something like that?
Oh, are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. I was thinking of
you know what I'm talking about,
the Easter Island with the heads with the like.
No. I'm talking about that big ass rock in the middle of nowhere.
Gibraltar? I don't know. I literally don't know. I don't know what you're talking
about. Gibraltar? You're talking about Australia.
Alcatraz? Are you talking about Alcatraz? I'm sorry, man. I'm failing you on this one.
This is a deep, dark
time. Should I just do a Google search for Big Ass Rock Australia and see what comes up? Maybe that will.
Fantastic radio. Absolutely. Yeah. Should.
Please stand by while I look up Big Ass Rock Australia.
Who doesn't want to know? I mean, wasn't it? It had been in one of the Crocodile Dundee movies, which is only 70% of everything I know about Australia. And 20% is Young Einstein. Underrated
Young
movie.
Young Einstein. Yeah, underrated movie. Oh, no. Okay. We're getting way off topic here, but that's great. I did not expect a Yahoo series reference.
That guy was such a great actor. They named an entire fucking website after him.
Weirdly enough, Tyson Dyer punted 9 times during the last game. They ran 18 drives. I actually look at Notre Dame drive charts a lot, and I don't recall a single instance that we've gotten above 16. So 18 drives is a lot. And of course, when you score 4 times in under a minute, I suppose you can fit in a lot more.
Yeah, that's
or 4 times under 2 minutes, I guess I would say. So I yet to figure out what kind of mechanic Tyson Dyer is, but I like that the idea that he's maybe holding down a job while also punting for New Mexico. So yeah,
I tip the cap to that guy right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. It's not like he's got a job as like a barista. He's a fucking mechanic.
Yeah, absolutely. Hardcore.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. So just looking at the group as a whole, the majority of guys are from California. They got 34 California guys. And actually, if you add up their New Mexico guys, which is 18, and their Texas guys, it's 17. So, like, basically, they have as many New Mexico and Texas guys as they have California guys. So I thought that was kind of interesting because I think I sort of expected them to all be sort of from Arizona or New Mexico, and that really wasn't.
You know, I didn't get a chance yet to listen to Pot of Gold, and they had Matt Hegarty on, who's from New Mexico, Aztec New Mexico. Without looking, I knew that. Because he's the only New Mexico scholarship player Notre Dame's had that I can remember in the last 15 years at least. But they were going to talk to him about how that works, New Mexico football recruiting. So
yeah, that's
I'm not trying to lead people down to another podcast, but it seemed interesting enough where I made a couple mental notes to make sure I listened to that by tomorrow. So.
Yeah, one of the things I found out while I was researching tonight that I thought was kind of a cool tradition is, and I don't I don't think this started with Davey, but Davey, maybe Davey did start it. He has one dude from New Mexico run out with the New Mexico flag as part of their runouts during warmups or whatever. And so he rotates them and he tries to pick, obviously he picks a dude from New Mexico, but he also tries to pick like a walk-on or somebody who's.
That's a major diss to New Mexico State. Major diss.
I never thought about that.
It's like, we're doing it for, we are the state, you ain't. You may have state in your name, but you ain't the state of New Mexico. We are, buddy.
Interesting. Interesting.
That's what Bob Davey's thinking.
I never even thought about this, the psychological warfare that's going on with the New Mexico flag. And
this is all I think about. This is right in my wheelhouse.
Speaking of Bob, obviously he's not gonna be there. 34-54 at New Mexico, his eighth season. He's actually only 10 games under 500 for his whole entire coaching FBS coaching career.
Stellar.
Yeah. His son Clay is a tight ends coach. He graduated from Arizona State. Obviously after it was 2007, so Bob had long since vacated a South Bend or whatever. And the guy who is the acting coach, help me out here, Saga Tuitele? I don't know. Anyways.
Let's talk about Clay for a second.
Okay, yeah, sure.
How much was his life altered? You think the differences between Notre Dame and Arizona State? And do not take this as a diss to Arizona State by any stretch of the imagination. I am in the same camp as the shutdown forecast guys is, where Arizona State is probably the most interesting school. Like, if someone says, where should I go? You just say Arizona State. That's where you want to be. Those are the good. Anybody I ever ran across in my fraternity nationally, they all wanted to go out to the chapter on Arizona State. Arizona State is a great place to be, but it's a huge difference between South Bend, Indiana. You just kind of wonder, like, that kid. What that kid's life could have been. You know, I don't think about the kids too often, but I'm thinking about the kids in this one.
I mean, should we have Dino on the show to talk about the difference between Arizona State and New Mexico? Our Notre Dame, I feel like.
Absolutely. I know Dino will back me up on that. I mean, Arizona State's it has a reputation for a reason because it's fantastic. Right. Everything you hear from it is it's nothing but good. They deserve a better football program than what they've had.
Yeah. So just the kind of dumb fun fact about this Saga guy who's being the acting coach. Obviously, whatever he does on Saturday affects Bob Davey's win-loss record. So if he loses, then Bob Davey actually gets the loss because he's acting coach, not interim coach. And obviously, Bob Davey experienced the same phenomenon when he filled in for Lou Holtz in 1996 after Lou had his neck surgery and thumped Vanderbilt, but didn't get credit for the win. But Ken Bear,
oh, the chickens come home to roost, Bob.
Ken Bear actually took the loss in the 2004 Insight Bowl because Ty had been fired, and so he was an interim coach. So that's the difference.
0-1.
Acting is the guys, your dude's coming back. Interim is like you left your dude, you know. So you got a dude in between the dude you're gonna hire next. The last thing I'm going to say about New Mexico is the one thing that surprised me was, you know, I figure state school or whatever. I know it's New Mexico, but their enrollment is 22,000 people. So I didn't think that was that big. I thought it would be a lot bigger. So
that's not surprising. I don't think. I mean, New Mexico is a pretty freaking rural state.
Yeah.
Like, very. It's not quite the metropolis Arizona is.
So at the risk of losing all of our listeners, that is my, as quickly as possible, condensed New Mexico review. They are a 35-point underdog. As I mentioned on the blog, hopefully you read my betting column every week, even if you don't actually bet.
You got some grief over that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't understand the point of pronouncing yourself as a non-better at a betting column, but that's fine. Different strokes for different folks, right? So Notre Dame is a 30-point favorite since 2005, 0-3 against the spread. I don't know. I mean, like, if anyone's going to cover 35 points against New Mexico, I would hope, you know, I don't know. I think some of the fun's taken out of it. And I don't know that Brian Kelly is a real animus against Bob Davey. I certainly think there's a lot of people that would love to see Bob Davey get pounded into the ground. But, you know, it's also important to keep perspective. Like, you know, and Jess Matano was on another podcast recently and said, well, I was 4 when Bob Davey got fired. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm officially old. So if you are one of the olds, you definitely want to see Bob, you know, take one on the chin. Of course, he's not going to be there to actually take it. So
I probably need to interject for just a quick moment and say, all the best wishes to Bob Davey and his health.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Like,
that's what pisses me off so bad about this whole freaking thing. Bob Davey just ruins everything. Like, there was so many more jokes to be had, and I have pulled so many more punches this week just because I'm old. I could have a heart attack tonight on air. I mean, that's how old I am. And it would not be a surprise. Like, it would be like, okay. So I was not going to taunt a man. But, you know, so he killed all the fun. This is the most funnest thing about this entire game.
Yeah.
You killed.
Plus, he had a.
Bob Davey killed my joy again.
I don't know if it was the last interaction he ever had with Eric Hansen, but it was definitely the most memorable one. He had some sort of, like, you know, he's sniveling comment about Eric Hansen reporting something that he didn't like. And he got on a conference call and blasted Eric Hansen. And it was really hella awkward. And so I was, I don't know. I'm snarky, petty, whatever you want to call it. I was looking forward to a post-game press conference when, you know, New Mexico got lit up every way, offense, defense, whatever, by Notre Dame. And, you know, say Notre Dame win by 35 or whatever, and it's this real lopsided score. You know, they got a single digit. And Eric Hansen just sitting there going, well, I got about 10 questions for Bob Davey.
You know, and Eric doesn't come down.
I know, but I think I feel like he would have made a special. You know, doing a coach's teleconference just ain't the same, you know, so.
That's a good question for the Pot of Gold podcast. Would you have come down?
Yeah.
To do that? Because that would have been Carter's job to go over there. But would Hansen have pulled rank on that one and been like, I got this.
We got some unfinished business.
Like the vet on the bench, I got this.
Well, the thing is, like, Eric's probably 100 times classier than I am, so I'm probably he probably didn't even cross his mind to sit there and you know, it'd be mean to Bob Davey. But
I'm sure it crossed his mind, but he would never let it on. And is the consummate, you know, that's the thing about Notre Dame's media, like the Notre Dame press corps. They got rid of EJ Holland, got rid of himself, whatever. I mean, that was the last thing you fucking get is that douchebag. But other than that, for the most part, just about everybody is a pretty class act. You know what I mean? Where I can't say that about every other program's press corps. I mean, there's some real freaking idiots, you know, flying around, you know, really like it's like me in a very it'd be like me unleashed on White Claws. And some of these programs have it. But no, our people up there are pros, and there's no way that Eric would do anything that would even resemble a little bit of payback, even though it would probably be well deserved.
Even though we'd all be silently
rooting. Oh, we'd all be rooting it on.
Like, please, God, let if you are a vengeful God at all, just let this happen. So, yes, yes, Bob Davey, as I mentioned when the news was announced, Bob Davey absolutely made the right decision to put his personal health ahead of any kind of reunion to Notre Dame. I had to imagine that travel at this point is not a good idea. And then obviously the added stress of coming back to South Bend for, I believe, only the second time since he's been fired. If I read that correctly, apologies to who I read that with and can't remember the source, but so.
What was the first time?
I think it was Matt Fortuna's article in The Athletic. He mentioned there was a return to South Bend for some reason, and I'm blanking on the reason.
Got something at his house? He had to knock on the door and ask Ty to get it for him?
I don't know. So the folks over Her Loyal Sons on their podcast, and they put out a couple podcasts a week, so you might have to go back a couple, had this great story, and I don't remember who they heard it from, about Bob Davey being very frustrated in a 7-Eleven.
Oh, with the hot dog machine?
With the hot dog
machine. Oh, yeah, that's – I remember first hearing about that. Like, oh, my God, dude, it was years and years and years ago.
Was that like an apocryphal NDN sort of thing or what?
Yeah, you know, that's one of those stories that when the Notre Dame internet community first, you know, in the early 2000s, whatever, that was a popular story. Okay. So I remember that well, but it doesn't get old. Like, you can just imagine Davey saying that.
I mean, can you recount the story? I don't know the
particular. No, well. I can't. Okay. I mean,
all right. So we'll just
the hot dog machine story is just like I know
that. Do a Google search, not at work preferably, but Bob Davey hot dog, and maybe you will get the story. You will get the story. It involves some profanity, but clearly you're okay with that since
it's happening. Clearly, I am. And my Instagram poll says I'm good. I can.
Yeah, it was a landslide, right? 80,
yeah, 20? it was a landslide win. So I'm good to go. So Bob Davey was basically saying everybody in South Bend's trying to fuck me
because whatever this malfunctioning 7-Eleven.
You know what? As a connoisseur of gas station hot dogs, and my wife hates me to death for this fact. Like we were dating, and I just stop at a gas station, and run in and grab a hot dog real quick. I don't know. I love them so damn much. So I can feel Davey's frustration, but I don't think I would ever utter out that everyone in Fort Wayne was trying to fuck me.
The laughs.
Oh, God.
We had a couple.
All right. So look, we are already about a half hour in. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are actually going to talk about Notre Dame football. I should have put a disclaimer going in. We're actually going to talk about Notre Dame football. And maybe, because there's some other stuff I want to talk about too. This is our big preview for New Mexico Lobos. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right. Now, look, as I said earlier, Brian Kelly stated that this is more about them than, you know, this is about what they do. And it's a very coach thing to say, especially when they go into these games. And, you know, the fear is that Notre Dame comes in like they did against Ball State. And that's well known. And that's something that Kelly had put the blame on himself completely. And you're not going to see that. And, you know, just for one quick second, and this is vintage me because I'm gonna just fly off this path for a second. Speaking of Brian Kelly making coaching decisions, I'm not sure, Jude. I don't know if you. I was gonna do a little story about this, but I never did. But I just decided not to. Colin Cowherd had some of the most. I've never heard him praise Brian Kelly like this before. But the other day he had said that, you know, Kelly was one of the most underrated coaches in college football, one of the best at making adjustments. I mean, for all the grief that we had within our internal selves and within our Notre Dame community about Notre Dame's struggles against Louisville, the outside perspective from some people, and Cowherd, who is not a fan of Notre Dame, he's a fan of ratings. so it really is hard to tell why he says what he says sometimes, you know, if it's actually what he thinks, feels, or if it's, you know, part of a ploy for listens. But he was enamored by Brian Kelly's adjustments after the quick start from Louisville. And he made a solid point. He made a point that I think a lot of us made, you know, a day and a half after that game, after the dust had settled. So, you know, I think Kelly's in that mode. I think Kelly's as good as Kelly has ever been. And I think that he keeps learning from his mistakes. God bless him. He's going to keep making them, but I think he tries to correct the ship. And so the shit that went on last year against Ball State could absolutely happen this week. But I just don't think there's any chance in hell that it does.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my impressions, just, you know, having a couple of days to before I went back and rewatched it or whatever, was they acted as if they were playing with the weight of the world on their shoulders. And it actually reminded me a lot of the USC game, about the similar kind of dazed start, the combination of seeing something from the USC offense that they weren't anticipating, and then also sort of, you know, committing the errors that put them in the bad positions to kind of give away drives pretty easily or whatever. So, you know, we talked at length in the last podcast about the fact that, you know, the first 11 minutes were less than ideal, but then there was 49 minutes of game time where obviously they went better. I was just thinking when you were talking about this, about how I would try to quantify this as like some sort of statistical analysis about Brian Kelly adjustments, because I think that Brian Kelly's record when trailing at halftime is actually pretty poor. But I don't know that that tells the whole story, because being down by 3 at halftime is a lot different than being down by 10 or 14 or whatever. And obviously the strength of your opponent plays into that or whatever. But that's what Colin Cowherd, what you've said, Colin Cowherd said, and I didn't listen to the comments or didn't catch them or whatever, feels kind of how I felt in kind of a more sober analysis, which was they made the adjustments that they needed to take control of that game. It's not like they gave away control of that game. I don't think it was ever really going sideways, but they
It was a strange beginning. I mean,
yeah, they asserted their will.
First 2 weeks is a strange beginning for the season as it is, and that was just like, you know, the personification of it was that first quarter, the way things went. I mean, it just took them a minute to get their feet on the ground, because it's not an excuse. They got no tape on these guys. You got Appalachian State, but it really wasn't, you know, it wasn't a whole lot of Appalachian State in that, you know, and you're using different personnel. It was just, you had to see some stuff on the field before you could really figure out what you wanted to do, you know, how bad you were going to exploit them with what you could do. And, you know, and then the loss of Jafar just compounded it all, because, I mean, they were going to go two backs probably 80% of that game, I would imagine. And then once you lost Jafar, there goes your game plan. And, you know, and that's probably an issue that they should have had a little bit better contingency plan, but it didn't seem that bad either. You know, I mean, just they had to make the adjustment, and they certainly made it. And, you know, then they had 10 days to make an adjustment to take on, you know, a cupcake in this situation. So, yeah, I mean, I think things are fine. I mean, if Notre Dame's rising up in the rankings, doing nothing and doing that, if the rest of the country isn't hammering them down, I don't think we need to be, because they're a lot rougher on Notre Dame and their deficiencies than we ever are.
Yeah, I mean, Chris from the Rakes Report has this, you know, when his little newsletter has a little like a winning is hard kind of roundup or whatever. And there was a lot of teams that we watched this past weekend while Notre Dame was just kind of chilling that really struggled with teams that no one expected them to struggle with, you know, first and foremost, Michigan or whatever. So
yeah, I think that point spread was incredible. That was a bullshit. I don't know how that point spread got out of Vegas.
Yeah, 22 and a half.
I think that just tells you how much everybody was buying in to this Michigan thing. And I think everyone, even after the game, you're kind of underselling Army, you know, because you're dogging Michigan. I didn't have Michigan ranked that high anyways. In my own fan pulse thing that I do.
Sure.
I think I had Michigan ranked 19th going into that game. And then I ceremoniously ranked them 25th. After the Army game. Yeah. So they only dropped 6 spots in my poll. but, I mean, it's around the same area.
It just it wasn't about, for me, it wasn't about the Army offense doing what the Army offense does best, which is using all four of its downs. To me, it was the lack of imagination in the play calling for the Michigan offense.
And
it made me less scared of October 26th.
They were just terribly sloppy.
Because I'll cop to it. I definitely bought into this. Josh Gattis is going to bring this whole new excitement. Jim Harbaugh is going to hand over the reins. And it just looked like, whether, I don't know if it was too many cooks in the kitchen or whatever, it never seemed like it had a real.
And they're playing the wrong quarterback.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll play the right quarterback by the time Notre Dame plays them. But I mean, what the fuck are we doing turning this into a Michigan podcast?
Well, I think a lot of Notre Dame fans were tuned into that game because.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I think a lot of what I do when Notre Dame's not playing is scouting the opposition. Absolutely. Because I want to either reconfirm my greatest fears or dispel them, you know? And so I watch a lot of Virginia football because not only is Bryce Perkins on my fantasy football team, and I think he's great, but, and I like watching, their cornerback there, who's real talented, Hall. But, I want to see if Virginia is that trappy game that everyone kind of talks about, like you're going to lose to Georgia and then you're going to lose again to Virginia, or you'll beat Georgia, but then you'll lose to Virginia, you know? And so I think there's been a lot of talk. And so I think it's natural that we all just kind of gather around the campfire with nothing better to do and start checking out, you know, what do you have? What do you have? You know, what do you got? You know? So
absolutely.
And I watched, honestly, I watched about 7 whole minutes of Bowling Green before they gave up 17 points. And I said, well, I think I've seen everything I need to see here. So, you know, it's still a Brian Van Gorder defense.
I didn't watch most of the Eastern game. Unfortunately, I was really psyched, to get like 2 weeks though, to watch my Eastern Michigan Eagles, and you know, got to see the win, week one against Coastal Carolina. Good win on the road on the teal turf. And then I was looking forward to the Kentucky game, go face down the SEC there. But things just were not lining up that day. and got to see little snippets, which was, you know, loss, like a 38-17 loss, whatever it was. Respectable.
I joined the chorus of people that have remained frustrated about these first 2 weeks, the way that the schedule is laid out, and am very excited about consecutive weekends until October 19th of Saturday Notre Dame college football.
It has just killed me. And listen, running the website and trying to keep things like on an even, it's been rough. Like this has been a difficult task to make it like relevant, you know, as if Notre Dame isn't relevant enough. But I mean, it's been an arduous task, you know, to I don't know how the hell these mid-majors do it when their schedules are all over the map, you know, come, you know, middle of October. I need normal game weeks. Like I still don't feel normal. I won't feel it's normal until next week when we're talking about a, you know, a win and hurrying up to get lead into the Georgia game. You know, it won't feel normal really still until next week.
Yeah. I mean, the big headline from the Georgia game, I mean, it's fascinating. First of all, Arkansas State's head coach was saying he wanted to send all the headlines about the Notre Dame game to the Georgia people because the Georgia papers are more interested in writing about the Notre Dame game than they are about Georgia's game against Arkansas State this week. And he's like, that's how we're going to win this game, is they have to be looking past us. They have to be not playing.
They literally have to have a newspaper in the huddle.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah. So
they got to whip out USA Today.
And I think a lot of us feel the same way about New Mexico, which is we want New Mexico because we want to see what adjustments have been made from Louisville. And again, I think that game has aged better than it was the night that we were kind of experiencing it.
Oh, sure.
But we want to see, you know, we want to see a lopsided result. We need to see a lopsided result because a lot of us have a lot of anxiety about that.
But at
about
the same time,
game.
I mean, at the same time though, they also need to get a lot of work out of some of these younger guys, or not just younger guys, like, second level depth chart guys, because this is what those games are meant to help you with. And when you do that, the win isn't as blasty as you like. Sure. Notre Dame does not have a good history of that over the last 20 years of just blasting teams with their second team coming in. But they need to get Phil Jurkovec and it's Jurkovec until he throws a touchdown. I'm laying it down. Phil Jurkovec in the game, running the offense, the actual offense, not handing off three times and then throwing on third and seven, or handing off two times and throwing on third and seven. They need to have him run the offense. They need to see what they have in the running back. Sebo Flemister is the fastest back we got left in the stables right now. So they really need to see him, because look, they need, I love Tony Jones Jr. I like what he brings, but you need some more explosion. Is Avery Davis going to be figured into the game plan at all?
That's what I was going to say to you was,
there's all sorts of work that needs to get put in. And the problem with work is that it often is at the cost of, like, you know, in a game like this, it could be two touchdowns. So for all you gambling nuts out there, a 35-point spread in a game where Notre Dame has to get some work in, I mean, you might want to think about taking those points. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'll predict a, like, 56-3 win, and so you're safe there.
So one of the things I did during the bye week was catch up on some of my charting that I wanted to do. And it brought me back to Ian Book's first start against Wake Forest. Well, second career start, first start of 2018. And Avery Davis played an outsized role in that game. So it just reminded me of sort of what he sort of brings to that backfield that I feel like is more closer to Jafar Armstrong than it is to anybody else. So I'm not saying he's going to replace Jafar Armstrong or he's going to be as great as Jafar Armstrong, but I'm actually really excited about this, seeing this again with Tony Jones Jr., because I the one person I kind of walked away from kind of most impressed with in the game from the offense, the backfield would be Tony Jones Jr. And now adding Avery Davis back into the fold, I hope he can pick up where he left off, because some of that stuff was pretty good, I thought. So I was I forgot how impressed I was with him in the backfield.
Yeah, he had a lot of, I mean, it was a position change. He had a lot of work to go, but you know, he has raw athleticism. He has some good speed, and so you can work with that. It's just like they tell you in baseball, you know, they'll teach you to hit, but you can't teach speed. I mean, right. You just can't. So,
sure.
I don't know. If we see like Joe Wilkins and Braden Lindsay out there, you know, don't freak out. I'm sure there's many of you who are just going to be like drooling over seeing Braden Lindsay go out there. But, you know, tamper expectations a little bit for these younger guys. But and also know that because we need to work them, it may not be as bombastic of a victory as what you're lining up for.
Right. I mean, I guess my only hope is, and again, Brian Van Gorder is not leading this defense, but my only hope is it's not a game like the game against Massachusetts, which ultimately ended as a blowout, but was weirdly competitive for way too long. I think the first two quarters of that game or whatever.
They had that big like 80-yard touchdown run where the kid wasn't touched at all. Right. Yes, they had some strange moments early on in that UMass game.
It doesn't need to be 14-14 with 10 minutes left to go in the second quarter, is what I'm saying. Right. You know?
Definitely good point there.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about something else for a minute.
Sure.
I was going to save this for the end, but I think it's earned its place in in our lineup here. What the hell is Notre Dame doing releasing yet another music video that if all they had to do was show somebody that wasn't involved in making it, would tell them to fucking shelve it?
Yeah. What can you give me the name of the song? It's like the Fighting Irish Y'all or whatever. That's the subtitle. We are Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish Y'all or something like that.
Yeah, it is the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, y'all. So now look, I was kind in my article today about it. I believe I was telling Jude that I felt that I pulled a lot of punches in this piece. Mainly because, look, we've all been there. Like, I get criticism all the frickin' time. I've been doing this since 2006. And the mountains of critiques of what I do, it's big, y'all. I mean, it's like that, y'all, it's big. So it is what it is. When I was in my early 20s, I was in a band. It was terrible. We legitimately thought we were doing God's work. We thought we had something kind of cool going on. And until it turns out, so you play it for someone and they're looking at you holding back every bit of laughter. I mean, they were doing everything they could not to tell you how bad it sucked. You know what I mean? You have to get outside of the bubble to get to the thing. And so, like, this was some type of project, I imagine, for a Notre Dame student. And look, it's all very well done technically. Like, the elements are there.
The production is great.
Yeah, the great production value. It's all there. But you could say the exact same thing about the Freak Bass video. Excellent production value. I mean, they had choreography. They had
I was going to say Ted Mandel, I believe, was all over that one. Actually had cinematography. I mean, I wasn't talking more about the video production. I was talking about the fact that it sounded professionally produced, like somebody who was in the studio and was mixed correctly.
You're presenting. Yeah. It doesn't matter anymore in this day and age anymore which format you're consuming the content. It's just all one jumble, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, my biggest thing is this does not have – no one does this correctly. No one has ever made a good in-house school song, hype. I mean, the hype videos are one thing, but, like, these, like, songs. Like, Purdue is – and I put that up on the site – notorious with their rap. And they've got a couple of them that were just horrible. I was on a group chat today with other SB Nation site managers, and – rather than like make fun of me because of Notre Dame's terrible video, they were sharing, you know, that no one does this right. We did one and it's horrible. Like, nobody does this correctly. Like, not even like professional, like musicians, like big time people. You just cannot make a corny song good. Corny songs are corny songs. And in this case, it had a lot of that handle. I mean, it was so blatant and
well, that,
and what it was is, doing.
The thing that makes me always uncomfortable with these kind of student-focused or student-led productions is I get uncomfortable when I can't tell if the person is being earnest or they're supposed to be in on the fact that this is cringy. Because if they're putting their heart and soul in it, I feel bad because it's, you know, we're adults on the internet. We're just sort of naturally snarky or whatever.
But that's the thing. They're still.
It's unlistenable after like a minute because it's like a word salad of Notre Dame phrases, and just kind of a jumbled mess. And I'm not. I don't know if it's supposed to be a hype thing. I don't think this song would get anybody hype. I don't think I would never hear it played in the tailgate. If it got played in the tailgate, I would like finish my beer and probably be like, well, it's time to move on. You know, like this isn't Here Come the Irish. This isn't like, this is even Shipping Up to Boston. Like this isn't anything. Which
those two are, neither one of those two songs are in-house. I mean, even Macklemore's Irish song, Irish Celebration, is a better reflection, you know, is a better deal than this. And that is corny to the max. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know. Like, I can't, I'm trying to tell you why I thought the Rudy thing was kind of like, I feel like the difference with the Rudy KFC commercial was like they were in on the joke, you know. You playing in the background?
I mean, if we haven't lost listeners by now.
Okay, I'm going to talk over a little bit, but when this is playing, you just understand if you've ever seen the musical Hamilton, you're going to know where this kid wrote this song from. Like, it is just, it's a straight, I mean, to be nice, it would be homage, but I feel like straight steal of sort of the way that Lin-Manuel Miranda does phrasing and, like, pacing of songs. I don't even know. It's rough. I don't need a rap song about Notre Dame. I just don't need it. Like I think one is probably plenty. You know.
I just feel I don't need any in-house song that they're making. Freak Bass was a funk thing. And as I'm talking right now, I just noticed a typo in my story today, which is always fitting. But this typo is even more fitting when it has to, when I said Notre Dame has learned virtually nothing from the Free Base incident. So it's a lot like freebasing, right? I mean,
we need to stage an intervention and say, please put down the crack pipe.
All I'm saying is that this stuff is reserved for if you making it in house. Keep it in house.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good.
I'm not out there handing out my kids' artwork, trying to sell it on the side of the road somewhere. What I mean?
This is a good senior project or FTT project.
I guarantee you, whatever the elements that he had to hit for this project, guarantee he nailed them all.
Yeah,
at
the end, that's the part that probably got me the most was at the end it said, you can download or stream the song from 29 different services or whatever. That means there's 29 different places I would want to never hear the song again.
I think we made like a total of like 50 CDs when I was in a band. It had like four songs on it. I hunted down like 40 of those. And literally like as soon as I got my hands on it, smashed it. I mean, didn't even wait. Like as soon as I saw it, nope, crack, gone. Like
I mean, I guess there was
a reason why, and I thought it was great. I worked hard on it. My friends worked hard on it. We really thought we had something going. It was a cool. It's still a very good idea, in theory. And then until you do it, and then it's like, you don't like this? Like, it's...
The one thing I will say is maybe we are the wrong audience. Maybe a couple of, old white dudes in their, approaching the 40s.
There was someone that came on the site and in the comments and stated that, and he's got 1957 in his name.
Okay.
So, that's fine. Look, I am not the taste police. I am, you can like whatever you like by all means. And I have no problems with what you like because that's what you like. I have no control over what you like. All I'm saying is this is my opinion about it. And I appreciate the work and understand the work. I'm not dissing any of that. But to me, it's awful. And it lines up with the awfulness that goes on all over the country with these types of things. They need to just be shelved. This needs to be on a closed circuit TV in the bathrooms in the music department.
I agree. I mean, even if a bunch of 20-year-olds told me that they love the song or whatever, I would say that's great. I guess it's for you. It's definitely not for me. This just gets added and to be honest with you, I hope to forget it. But if I do remember it, it will be because somebody else will have made one of these terrible hype songs or whatever you want to call them. And we'll say, hey, didn't Notre Dame try this a couple years ago and fail spectacular with some sort of Hamilton-esque ripoff? And you'll say, oh yeah, what was the name of that song? I'm like, it's got the word y'all in it. So look for Fighting Irish and y'all. You'll probably find it.
Now, there's something that I do want to know though. We just about 15 minutes ago, like this is a miracle. We got a response on Twitter to what was my tweet before I went and wrote the story, which was basically the title of what the story was. What do we learn from Freak Brace? Nothing. And the guy at Matthew Mecco replied, We will always have the NBA tailgate poem. It opened the doors for what followed. This is the most cryptic tweet I think I've read in at least 3 days.
NBA?
I've got to know what this is now.
NBA? What is NBA? What?
Yeah, so guys getting their masters there? The royal guys, people getting their masters at Notre Dame at a tailgate had a poem. And okay. It says it opened the doors for what followed. I got to know more about this. I need to know more about this.
Deep dive. I need more.
Becco says, husband and dad, God, country, Notre Dame, management consultant, foodie, Paul's Boutique is on repeat. This guy sounds like a friend. This guy sounds like we could hang with this guy. So I got to know what he's talking about.
So back in the day when I went to Notre Dame, and not to date myself too horribly, we had, and I don't know if they still have it, every student had access to shared files that other students put out. So sometimes it was games, sometimes it was movies or whatever. And this song, Harold Swanigan Rap, went around. And I wish that I had it. I wish I also had the thing that somebody cut, because I'd play it this week. Bob Davies, like stupid ass things that Bob Davies said. And he would say something like, you know, well, I don't know how they them Air Force offensive linemen fit in those jumbo jets, you know. And it's like, okay, you know, like there's jobs in the Air Force that aren't sitting in like cockpits of, you know. And he's like, and he said something like, well, we got 12 Rudies out there. I'm like, okay, well, that's not a good thing to have 12 Rudies out. You know what I mean? So it was just a collection of Bob Davie. You know, and there was also one about my rector, Father Doyle, saying the words enormous corn penis because somebody was selling an illegitimate shirt that said husk this for the Nebraska game in 2000 with a leprechaun with, as Father Doyle said, enormous corn penis. And so the thing was, he sent a voicemail to the alumni rector, and the alumni rector, instead of just making his own voicemail saying like, hey, gents, you know, just let you know there's a bootleg t-shirt going around. We think it's profane. And obviously if you buy one and we catch you with it, we'll take it away from you or whatever. He just forwarded Doyle's voicemail. And so then somebody did a Forgot About Dre beat on the behind it, and they're like, anomalous. And you have to understand Father Doyle, like he's got this deep Virginia accent or whatever. And it was just literally the funniest thing. And I'm telling you right now, if you're listening to this podcast and you have the Harold Swanigan rap, or you have Forgot About Doyle,
yes,
or you got Bob
Bring Davey, it forward.
Bob Davies Speaks, I think it was called. It was like an MP3 or a wave or file or whatever. Please, let's resurface that on the internet, because the world needs to hear the ridiculous things that we came up with in the year 2000.
You know, I was able to get pictures from a camera that I found on the ground inside Notre Dame Stadium 20, 25 years ago, disposable camera. I brought those to Twitter, and within a matter of minutes, the people came forward. It was these people's camera, their pictures, and I was able to get those pictures to them. So there is power. I have power. I have lots and lots of power. So we need to get this. We need to find this.
Somebody must have it, right? I mean, it's 19 years old, but at the same time, somebody must have it.
Somebody has it on a old laptop or old Commodore 64, whatever the hell we had back then. We need to know about this NBA tailgate poem. We need this info. We need this content. Okay. I need to put this in a needle and inject this into my veins. Very badly.
And I apologize. My dad's listening to this. I apologize for saying the words enormous corn penis three times. So there you go.
He's so proud.
He's so proud of me right now.
I apologize to your dad for the F-bombs tonight. I had an Instagram poll that told me I was okay.
Sorry. No, we always follow the gram.
I do it for the peeps, you know? All right.
So I thought we were going with this conversation tonight.
We are right around hovering our time here. The only last thing I want to add to this whole conversation is I actually was wrong about no one doing this correctly. And you know who does this correctly, these songs? It's Miami. When they did the Seventh Floor Crew as terrible as it was, it's still the best thing that's been done in this realm. G-Rack and his third leg hanging is awful, and it's still better than anything else that we've had since then. So,
can you embed the video? Does the video exist on YouTube? Can you embed the video?
You know, I haven't searched for it for a while. We used to play it at our fantasy draft for a few years. I definitely have to look that one up.
Okay.
It's solid. I mean, think about Miami football players in the early 2000s rapping about being football players at Miami and not on the football field.
You just reminded me, too, that Brad dropped the ball on his – and since Brad's not here, I'm going to slag on him. Brad dropped the ball about his annual hype video review. One of my favorite articles written last August, I believe, was he took, like, five hype videos and he basically just scored them on different completely made-up Brad metrics. But it was quite fun. I mean, hype videos are sort of – a spiritual
kin to preseason hype videos are
what we're talking about. And so, you know, there's ways that they kind of are cliche and there's ways that they're done well. And sometimes it's like, you're going to have a seizure because of all the cutting and we have different strong feelings about whether or not you should use players that have graduated or have transferred programs or whatever.
Not in a preseason hype video. Absolutely not.
So that's that. We have some very strong opinions about hype videos that we didn't get to share this August. So shame on Brad.
It was this whole start to the season. It screwed everybody. No, I mean, I got writers running around not knowing
what day Brian Kelly's going to do a press conference.
Yeah, dude, it's not their fault. It's like it is such a mess. I am just ready to get into the driver's seat and get this thing rolling. So, as I say that, we're going to stop this freight train of terror, and hopefully you guys learned a little something tonight. I don't know.
Can I do a quick one final
thing? Absolutely.
Even though it's been so random. Today is the release day of Hesburgh, the movie on DVD, streaming services, wherever you consume movies from.
Just go to Amazon.
You are officially on notice. You are out of excuses. You got to get yourself a copy of Hesburgh. You got to watch it. You got
to
enjoy it.
Listen to me, Youngju. Listen to me. It is on my watch list right now on Amazon Prime.
Perfect.
I put it on last night. And so the goal was either I doubt I'll be able to do it tonight, but most likely tomorrow when there's nobody around, I'll be able to pop it in. So, yeah. It is definitely on my my to-do list because I missed my window of opportunity in August to see it in the theater.
Awesome. So everybody else, Hesburgh, I mean, if you followed us during the summer, you heard us talk endlessly about it. We interviewed Jerry Barco, who's one of the producers, obviously Notre Dame graduate as well. So if you missed that, you can always go back and check out that old podcast. Probably, 100% less swearing than this one was? So you got that going for you, too.
Considerable. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot less. It was that was a good show. I liked having Jerry on. Maybe we'll have him on in the off season just to talk about the aftermath of it all.
And if you're feeling good after you listen to that podcast with Jerry Barca and you want to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, that's obviously well appreciated. We're not looking for a specific stars.
No, man, you rate with your heart. Rate what you think it is supposed to be. I just need 100 of them. We were trying to get there before the season started. Didn't quite make it, but we were so close. I think we were like maybe only four or five away. But you know, on top of that, I mean, besides all that, we just want to know what y'all want to hear. We understand that this is a different podcast than the Irish Illustrated podcast or the Pot of Gold or Her Loyal Sons, like, which is great. I think I listen to all those. Yeah, these are almost enough all podcasts that I listen to. So I like different. You know, I don't want to hear the same stuff from everybody. That gets boring and repetitive. So Pete Sampson thought he was climbing new ground in the Shamrock, that they've been talking about different stuff. But I am here to tell you that the Shamrock is not the only podcast around that doesn't just strictly talk about what's happening on the field. I think we just proved ourselves tonight. So
I like Bray and Augie. I don't remember their place. There's one's called Under the Dome or From the Dome.
Yeah, Under the Dome. There's one called Down in Front or something, which is a great name for the podcast.
I listened to my first episode of Always Irish the other day. I was like, this guy is just way more excited about the things that bother him than I would ever be. But I was into it. I was listening to it.
He's very excited on Twitter.
I felt like if Alex Jones was a Notre Dame fan and he had a podcast, like that,
I would listen to that. Like.
It was delightfully zany. I'm not sure that's what he was going for, but I was into it. So
let me tell you, there has been at least, I'd say, a couple of hours of thought of me doing like another podcast in total character. And, and I had given thought, it's freaking hilarious. You said, Alex Jones, I had thought about something along those lines, like picking out one of the, like just a totally known personality and just rolling with it. So I may have just given away a secret to somebody who's going to run with this. That's great. I would love, if someone wants to do that, I will listen to that podcast. If you want to do an Alex Jones version of a Notre Dame football podcast, you have got a listener, a rater, and a reviewer right here in Hicksville, Ohio. And if somebody doesn't do that, off season.
I also, you know, my boy Andrew over at Irish Football Archive actually just started a podcast too, and his first guest was Mark Edwards, and he was talking about this random game, random to all of us, 1996 Purdue, but I think it actually ended up being his first Notre Dame game, so it was obviously very special to him. So that was interesting too.
I was at that game.
It was very interesting. So
I'll tell you what. Too, he is somebody that Irish fans should send a thank you note to, anyways, because even after all the crash down from YouTube for full length games, he does a good
still
job.
Still flying under the radar for now. I'm so glad.
Yep. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe don't send a thank you. Pretend you don't know him.
Actually, what you should do, and this is an easy thing, right? Easy way to say, hey, I appreciate you. He's got a Patreon page. It's literally $2 a month, and he will send you an old game. He's got a list of, like, I don't know, 50, 75 old games or whatever. And so every couple of weeks I'm like, all right, I'm feeling that 2010 Army. Like, let's look at that. You know what I mean? Like, okay, 1999 Kansas. Like, here we go. You know, like Eddie Robinson classic. Let's see some Jarius Jackson back from injury, you know? So, and there was wins.
That's a good note to leave on. Look at us. We have given so much love to other podcasts out there tonight. And like, we love y'all. That's what makes
support Andy Tex on Extra Life. There we go.
Gotta think about what we're locking down here. Hey, Tom Noy and Carter Carlos have a new podcast, Extra Point.
Oh, Extra Point, yeah. I didn't even listen to it, but I'm sure it's good.
Yeah, this is the time. Like, we're like getting rid of all family business here as we lead up to getting done with New Mexico and then leading into Georgia week. So
yeah.
We're done. I promise you, we're done. We're done talking now. So we're just gonna wait. Dude, no, we're not done. God, damn it. Let's get a prediction on the podcast, since this is our quote unquote preview for New Mexico.
Damn, I wish I had looked up my prediction that we had made back, because I still believe that's basically what it's going to be like. So I probably had a 48-17 sort of thing or whatever. Feeling pretty good about Notre Dame scoring in the 40s, feeling pretty good about New Mexico not scoring, or scoring under 20. So I'm going to stick with, I think I probably said 48-17. So I'm going to stick with that.
Okay. 48-17 from you.
Right. So they don't cover the spread, but obviously it's a comfortable win.
Okay. I think I'm going to roll with, I think 56-10. I think New Mexico gets a New Mexico doesn't score two touchdowns. Maybe it's 56-13. But I'm going to go with 56-10. Notre Dame doesn't kick a field goal. It's going to be touchdown or bust for them.
I love it.
I just think that's the way they're going to roll with it. And I'm totally cool with that. I think that Phil Jurkovec gets plenty of snaps.
He throws his first touchdown pass and becomes Phil Jurkovec.
Phil Jurkovec's first touchdown pass is going to be to Chris Finke.
Oh God.
And
like my eyes twitching over here. You realize that, right?
You are going to see like some kind of shine come out of the press box and you're going to know it's me. Like it's going to be it's going to be like this is so blasphemous. Like Christ coming out of the tomb. Like that energy of light come out. That's what's going to happen when Phil Jurkovic throws his first touchdown pass to Chris Finke.
Wow.
Lock it up. As this guy's at Solid Verbal, let's throw another good podcast on there. As they would say, lock it up. Oh, God, we are covered all bases. I should just wear a shirt that says, will you be my friend? give a shout out to Jess tonight. Might as well throw Charlotte in there, MVP. Okay, we gotta wrap this up. So 48-17 for Jude, 56-10 for me. We're done. Go Irish.
Beat Lobos.
Beat them.